In this first hour of the show, we'll be talking about right-wing politics in Europe, specifically in Austria. We have two guests with us here on the program. Joining us here from the University of Illinois, from our faculty, Matty Bunzel. He's Assistant Professor of Anthropology and Jewish Studies. And also a guest who is visiting the campus, Doron Rabinovich. He is a writer, historian, poet from Vienna. He is well known in his country as a writer and a poet, and also as a political activist. He has been a very important figure in the anti-Haider movement in Austria. And there what we're talking about is extreme right-wing Freedom Party and its leader, Jörg Haider, a name that perhaps you may have heard and yet would say you don't know a great deal about. And we're certainly going to be talking about him and his participation in politics in Austria, what that says about that country, and also, though, about the larger issue of anti-immigrant, anti-foreigner sentiment in Europe these days, anti-Semitism. This is something that our guest has been much involved in working against. And he's here on the campus, and we'll be spending a few days talking with students and faculty. He'll also be giving a talk about this specific subject, Fighting Racism in Contemporary Austria, as part of the MillerCom series. That will be taking place today, 4 o'clock this afternoon, at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. And as is the case with all MillerCom events, it's free and open to anybody who would like to attend. So if you're interested, certainly you should feel welcome to go and hear his talk. But he's been good enough to come here with us so that people who couldn't attend the talk and still hear some of what he has to say. And of course, as we talk, questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And if you match the numbers with letters on the phone, you get WILL, which may or may not make it easier, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, thank you both very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Just to begin with an overview, it's striking when you start looking at this, in fact, just how strong parties on the right, extreme right parties, have become in recent years in Europe. For example, in Belgium, a party there made the best showing in local elections ever in the city of Antwerp. In Denmark, there's a party, an extreme right party that gets 18% support in the country, and apparently it's similar in Sweden, Norway, the Czech Republic, Estonia, Finland, Russia, in Poland, sort of on and on. That invites the question: why, and why now, in particularly in the past few years, have these parties, these extreme right-wing parties, been growing in strength?
I think that one reason is that social problems are discussed in a different way in the last years. They're discussed in a racist context. And some years ago, when you had social problems, you discussed about concepts, projects for society. Today, who's blamed for the problems are the migrants. This is something that goes on in the whole continent of Europe. What is the speciality in Austria is that after 45 in Austria, Austria declared itself as being the first victim of Hitler. And that meant that they didn't deal with past as, let's say, in Germany. And that opened also the possibility for anti-Semitics or racism in politics. And that means that this is the difference, let's say, between the Vlaams Bloc in Belgium or the Freedom Party in Austria, which is now part of the government. And this is really a problem, that a party that was had a racist campaign in the elections of 99 with posters saying, with posters which more or less had a racist campaign against Afro-Europeans and Africans, for instance, has now won seats in the government.
His, Jörg Haider's, power base is in one particular part of the country. But, well, Matty is shaking his head. I guess here's the question I was going to ask. My impression was his power base was in one place in particular. And then I was going to ask, well, is there fairly widespread support throughout Austria? And it's not just in Carinthia where he is from.
He's the provincial governor of Carinthia, which is his actual post that he occupies currently. He's not actually the leader, technically speaking, of the Freedom Party. He's not the party boss.
He was, but because there was so much controversy involving him, he stepped aside. But for all intents and purposes, he's still the head of the party.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. And it's true that he is strongest in Carinthia, where he actually has the majority, which entitles him to be the provincial governor. But he's frighteningly strong all over Austria. Hmm. I don't know, Doron.
Yeah, I think that Carinthia is not an exception, but Carinthia is some kind of the most explicit part where he can make his policy very clear because of the history of Carinthia. You have in Carinthia a Slovenian minority, and therefore the German national force in Austria is very strong in Carinthia. But the party is also very strong in Vienna. The interesting thing with the Freedom Party and with Jörg Haider is always the link also to the Nazi past. He was once asked who were the most cruel politicians of the 20th century. And he answered Churchill and Stalin. Now, I have to say, he's not a fascist. He's not somebody like Hitler. Mm-hmm. But what he does is he tries to deny past. He tries to change the past so that an anti-emancipatorian and racist future can be possible. And he always plays with this past. It's very important. This is possible in Carinthia, but it is possible all over Austria, mm-hmm. all over Austria. And if you remember, we had in 86 an election campaign, and Kurt Waldheim, the former General Secretary of the UN, became President of Austria. This was exactly the year when Jörg Haider became the leader, or you could also say maybe the Führer, of the Freedom Party.
And I think, isn't it also really that that's the point when we really see a building in Austria of this idea that you pointed to earlier, that Austria was the first, were the first victims of the Nazis?
Well, it's interesting because that idea that Austria was the first victim really has been enshrined in Austrian identity ever since World War II. In fact, it was ironically aided and abetted by the Allied forces who in 1943... in the so-called Moscow Declaration, argued that Austria was, in fact, the first victim of Nazi Germany in hope of promoting resistance in Austria. There is some truth to that. There is some logic to that. Austria was an independent country, an independent nation state prior to the so-called Anschluss, the annexation in 1938. And it is true that Germany took over and Austria became part of Germany. So in terms of international law, Austria did indeed or could indeed be seen as a victim of Nazi aggression. And Hitler certainly, you know, went to great lengths to incorporate what he considered his Heimat, his home, he hailed from Austria, into the Reich. What this sort of obscures is the fact that Austria's population overwhelmingly supported the annexation, and those sentiments never really changed. So in 1945, the question is, how was 1945 experienced by the majority of Austrians? Was it experienced as a liberation, which is what I would call it, or was it experienced as a defeat, which is what the majority of the Austrian population would have seen to be happening? Now, this set in motion a kind of schizophrenic historiographical situation where Austria, the official Austria, the state, constructed itself as a victim, whereas the population saw itself as the party that was defeated in a war.
There's a very interesting contradiction because there was an interview in the Jerusalem Post with the Chancellor Schüssel, Wolfgang Schüssel now, and he didn't only say that Austria was the first victim of Hitler, but he even said that the Austrians were the first victims. The Austrians. Now, in this country, in the same time, the old comrades still have gatherings and remember their dead comrades who who fell in the fight for the German Reich. And you still have gatherings of the Waffen-SS and the SS. So how can they be all victims? The interesting thing is that if you don't discuss this, and this was the case in Germany. In Germany, after 45, there was a discussion about the past. And also in the years of 68, the new generation discussed the past. In Austria, this discussion just really started in 86 with Kurt Waldheim. Exactly. And now it came to a certain end, in a way, because with the entrance of the Freedom Party to the government, what we experience is a legitimation, of denial of the past and of racism. That's the big problem. And that's also the unique experience of Austria in Europe, because in the other countries in Europe, you have racist politics, you have racist parties, but still they are not in the government.
Mm-hmm. And pardon me. I wanted to have you also talk a little bit about Mr. Schüssel's party, the People's Party. One would wonder why would you go into coalition with Jörg Haider? Where does the People's Party? How do they talk about these? How does that party talk about these things?
It's a fascinating question. Let me answer by giving one additional layer of context, which might be sort of considered to be frightening. The Freedom Party is literally the successor party of the Nazi Party, the NSDAP. The way that happened is that in 1945, when Austria was liberated, the members of the Nazi Party, about 8% of the Austrian population, were disenfranchised. They were not allowed to vote in the election of 1945. The issue then became what will happen to these voters as soon as they would be re-enfranchised, which happened in 1949. And there was a kind of debate going on. And the big parties, the Social Democrats, Left Liberals, and the Christian Conservatives were basically bullying for those votes. What happened in the end is that a third party was formed, the so-called Party of Independence. And that party was basically became the kind of party of the former Nazis. It was basically formed after, in a sense, the Nazis resented the fact that they were being that the two parties were going for their votes, created their own parties. And I think in 1956, the Party of Independence, i.e. former Nazis, renamed itself to the Freedom Party. So there's literally a direct link of succession. Having said that, this goes back to your question, David, on the People's Party. The People's Party sees itself as an anti-fascist party in its basic definition, which is to say that in 1945, the two main parties that emerged in post-war Austria were, again, the Social Democrats and the Christian Conservative People's Party, both of which saw themselves in opposition and in antithesis to the Nazi past. And very much the idea of Austria being the first victim, you have the two parties that were victimized and were disallowed by the Nazis, in a sense, coming together, forming the new coalitions in post-war Austria. It is a radical break with that party's history and that party's tradition and that party's self-understanding as a democratic, Christian-based center party to actually go into coalition with the successor party of the Nazi Party.
Yeah, this is exactly true. On the other hand, the two parties, as you said, tried to get the votes of the Nazis after 45. And so you have peculiar things going on in Austria after 45. You have in the 70s, the head of Carinthia then is a social democrat. That's right. But he says to his voters, I'm proud that I had been
in the Hitler youth
guy. So and you have the Popular Party, who was in favor of Kurt Waldheim. And interestingly enough, you had a certain fascism or authoritarian system before the Nazis entered Austria. And this was the Christian social authoritarian system. So the People Party has several traditions, more democratic, more anti-fascist, even some liberal traditions, and also this more authoritarian and closed, I would say, traditions. And what happens now is Schüssel wanted to become chancellor. He wanted it very much.
Yes.
And he was the third to come out in the elections, 99. And what came out, he was the loser of the elections, but he was the winner of the coalition talks. And that, I think, was the main reason why he formed a coalition with the Freedom Party, because the Social Democrats would have been the strongest party.
We have a caller who's been waiting patiently, and my apologies for keeping them waiting. We'll get right to them. And perhaps also I should introduce again our guests here in the studio with us, Matty Bunzel. He's Assistant Professor of Anthropology and Jewish Studies at the University of Illinois, and Doron Rabinovich. He's a writer, historian, political activist, has been a very important figure in the movement in Austria against the Freedom Party and its leader, Jörg Haider. He's here to talk. In fact, he'll be spending a number of days on the U of I campus, but one event I'll mention again, he'll be talking about this specific topic as a part of the MillerCom series this afternoon at 4 on the U of I campus. And if you're interested, you can certainly attend. And questions are welcome, 333-WILL or 9455. We also have toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here to talk with in Champaign and on line one. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I have two points of criticism, one general political and two from a Jewish point of view. The general political one is to me that the neoliberal regimes that dominate Europe and the United States right now have a kind of quasi-fascism about them. They're very corporate. There's a strong racial undertone. And when you have something like the Freedom Party in Austria, I see that as just a kind of a symptom of that larger problem, and I see that as kind of taking the heat off the problems of the neoliberal regimes that now dominate the economic system, that cut back in social programs, that privatize, and so forth. From the Jewish point of view, I think that I realize there's an emphasis on both anti-immigrant and anti-Semitism. The anti-Semitism seems not only minor but exaggerated in the sense that it seems to me there's a pattern by which we have a concern with anti-Semitism as a result of the Holocaust that is, at this point in time, 55 years later, extremely misplaced, and there's an avoidance there. There's an avoidance of the fact that Jews, and as I say this as a Jew, are no longer victims, but we are indeed perpetrators. And I'm very suspicious of speakers who regularly come to Champaign-Urbana speaking of whatever anti-Semitism happens to exist in the world, but rarely do we have speakers that come through that speak of what is going on in Israel, in the Middle East in general, and that are critical of American support for Israel. So I have those two general concerns.
Well, you can respond any way you like.
Yeah, I'm living in Austria, and my main concern, in fact, is about the racism going on there. That means that in our anti-racist movement, we are fighting for the rights of migrants, for the rights of migrants to be elected in trade unions, for the rights of migrants to vote in local elections, for an anti-discrimination law. But in Austria, the anti-Semitism is not such a big problem for 7,000 Jews that live there. It is something else. It's a legitimation of the other racism that hits hundreds of thousands of people,
uh-huh.
and also the African community living there under really unbelievable circumstances in the year 99.
Mm-hmm.
I myself, I was also active in the France of Peace Now in Vienna.
Yeah.
But personally, I'm not a perpetrator. I don't have. This is not the issue that I have to discuss. What I am, I'm also not a victim. I'm not a victim at all.
Yeah.
I'm somebody who is active against racism. I think that this is the main question. The second,
do you feel that you have to struggle against the neoliberal regimes that govern Europe and that create something like the Freedom Party, as they create resentment among the middle and working classes who are also the victims of cutbacks in government programs and the moving around of jobs and this race to the bottom that so characterizes modern neoliberal globalized economic life? Do you feel that that's an important critique that you have to deal with?
I think that what we see is that if you don't have a social vision or a social concept anymore, then racism and the politics of resentments gets bigger in some countries. In Austria, it becomes very strong. And it means something different than in other countries. Even if in other countries you have also antisocial politics, what we experience now is that elected politicians of self-governed bodies of the workers, let's say, in Austria, mm-hmm. suddenly are dismissed by the government. So what we talk about is the principles of democracy suddenly ignored, which I don't mean that Austria is not a democracy anymore. We have a parliament there and so on and so on. But the rights of opposition that you have in other countries in Europe, where I also would have criticism about certain developments. But these rights are granted, and we see that plebiscitarian and populist form of racism just really, in a way, changes our system.
Well, I hope that when you speak to the mostly Jewish people that you will meet in Champaign-Urbana, that you will emphasize the fact, the things that you have just said, that this is really not, this is not the Holocaust, you know, revisited. This is a more general economic and social problem directed primarily at non-Jewish immigrants in Austria and in other European countries as well.
I need to jump in here for a moment for a couple of reasons. I hope the caller will forgive me. First of all, as we're coming to the midpoint here, I need to reintroduce our guests. And also, as this is the first Tuesday of the month, we are required to do a test of the emergency alert system. So let's do that right now. This is a test of the emergency alert system. And this is AM 580, WILL Urbana, Focus 580. Again, sorry for the interruption, but as the message says, we are required to do that at about this time every month. Let me again introduce our guests here in the studio with us, Matty Bunzel. He's Assistant Professor of Anthropology and Jewish Studies at University of Illinois. Doron Rabinovich, he's writer, historian, poet, also political activist from Vienna, Austria, among other things, has been an important figure in the anti-freedom party movement in Austria, that is the extreme right-wing party, led by Jörg Haider, and he's visiting the campus to talk about this and other things as well. Questions, welcome, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. I sort of jumped in on you before, and I don't know if, Matty, you wanted to make some comment on what the caller had to say.
Absolutely. I think that was an incredibly important point that's really worth discussing. I just wanted to point out, again, an irony. In Europe, the main agent of neoliberal change, transformation, is the EU. It's the European Union. And one could very easily read parties like the Freedom Party in Austria, the Vlaams Blok in Belgium, and related parties as a resistance against the EU. It's very much an attempt in to preserve the nation state, to preserve its rigid boundaries, to preserve a kind of ethnic authenticity, be that Austrian-ness, German-ness, Danish-ness, Belgium-ness, against the neoliberal transnational flows of migrants, commodities, etc., that's being instituted by the EU. So it's really dangerous in some ways to in a sense warn against the sort of the neoliberal threats of that are out there. And while I completely agree that the Freedom Party is a symptom and an effect of these neoliberal forces, they are also actually very self-consciously forms of resistance. And I'll just give one last layer of context. Austria joined the EU very late. Austria joined the EU in 1995. And as in every other country that wants to join the EU, there has to be a referendum in the country. That referendum was quite contested in Austria. It was approved in the end. Austria did join. But, of course, the main force of opposition against the EU, against joining this neoliberal organization, was Jörg Haider's Freedom Party. And Jörg Haider basically put his entire political credibility on the line to argue against Austria joining the EU on grounds of preserving Austria's national integrity, on preserving Austria's history, on the danger of Austria being overcome, overrun by foreigners, be those migrant laborers, be those Eastern Europeans. And this retained, you know, to this day, is a mainstay of their policies, is a basic anti-EU position. So I just wanted to add that.
Sure. Well, I'm interested in maybe you're talking about a couple of other things having to do with what's happening with the Freedom Party recently, just because, I have read about them and I wonder, you know, is this a serious problem for them or not? The fact that allegations were made last year that the party paid police informants for secret information on that they could use against their opponents. Also last fall, the party had its worst electoral defeat since 86. Then also in the fall, I think one of the Freedom Party cabinet ministers said, "I'm exhausted, I'm leaving." And of course, there was huge controversy near the end of the year when Jörg Haider visited the Vatican and met with the Pope. And does any of that point to any sort of significant weakening support for the party or weakening of strength of the party?
The party is a party of scandals, but not only in the last year. They had a lot of scandals also in the years before. But till now, this was not so important. One of the main problems was that you didn't have to believe Haider, to believe in Haider. You knew that he was a liar, but in one thing, he had to stay true in his racism and his xenophobia politics. But now he's in another situation and the party is in another situation. On one hand, they have now a real movement as an enemy. And, you know, people tend to see if there is a struggle going on between one movement and the other movement, they back off and think, okay, let's just, maybe it's not such a good thing to be with them. This is one thing. They met opponents. But then there is another thing. They are in government. So now it is true that people think, okay, they are not so much better when they're in government. But I have to say that what happened to us in Austria, nevertheless, even if now they are weaker than they were before, something has happened. The policy was legitimized, and this can mean that racism as a tool is like another tool in politics. This is one thing. And the other thing is that Haider managed, because he stepped back, and he is now the head of Carinthia, and he's no more the head of the party, but he is inside of the coalition board. So he's in a peculiar situation. He is the opposition to the government. He says to the people, nothing changes. What did we do this all about? We still have this and this and this and this and this. And on the other hand, he's inside. And this is a dangerous situation, and we knew it from the beginning on. Nevertheless, I think that now he is in a dilemma. It is possible that he will not overcome his crisis. But if he overcomes the crisis, it is also possible, still I think possible, that he becomes Chancellor of Austria, which would really be a catastrophe. Because what happens then is that the European Union would have to face that one of its politicians, this wouldn't be only an Austrian politician, this would be a European politician. So the reaction of the European Union was so strong, not because of the Austrian situation, but because of the European fears. And I think that Matti Bunzel is very right. It's a European question. And the question is, will the European Union find a democratic way and also a social vision so that all these forces can be really weakened?
Mm. Can you really imagine such a thing happening, that is Jörg Haider becoming head of the government?
I have to say that most of my friends and most of the journalists in Austria think that this is not going to happen anymore. But I have also to admit that I was very skeptical in the last years. I bet with my friends on the election outcome. And I have to tell you that I won, which I was not fond of. And then I had another bet about the coalition outcome, about the coalition talks. And I was also winning this one. So I hope that this time I'm wrong.
It has to be added that Jörg is an unbelievably skillful politician. I mean, it's, you know, for those of us in opposition to him, and it's frightening. I mean, it's frightening to watch him operate. It's he's quite brilliant. He also consumes sort of the intellectual energies of the Austrian left, or even, you know, sort of the Austrian intelligentsia. I mean, he essentially is the topic of every single conversation that any of us ever have in a coffee house. And he really is at the heart and soul of Austria's public sphere.
There was, for a period of time, there were sanctions imposed on Austria by the other countries in the EU. I'm interested in how it is that the sanctions came to be lifted, and then there was, you know, that seemed to be something of a triumph. I mean, that's too big a word for Mr. Schüssel,
absolutely,
who then, you know, found it possible for him to travel, and he went to,
that's,
I think
it was
Ireland, with, after having been under this cloud for some period of time. How exactly did that happen?
When the coalition was formed, they agreed upon certain measurements. I wouldn't say that there were sanctions against Austria. There were measurements against the government. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to have binational meetings with other government members of Austria, the government members of the European states, only in the work on the European Union level, but not as a friendly act. And the opposition in Austria got under such pressure, under such chauvinist pressure, that the opposition parties wanted the European Union to lift these measurements. Then they had three politicians of Europe coming to Austria and speaking with the main parties. They also, I also had a meeting with them, and they were very sympathetic to our cause. But as the opposition party said that the measurements are now counterproductive and they should be lifted, they did it. Not without saying harsh critique against the Freedom Party. But again, you're absolutely right. What came out was that the government has won. And this is, I have to admit that this was to be foreseen, because they had to check if the human rights situation in Austria still is democratic. Now, we never said that this government is a dictatorship. We never said that this government in some month is going to change the human rights situation. What we said is that a certain type of politics is legitimized, and this is what really happened. But moreover, some things have happened that really are a human rights problem. Like the Minister of Justice in Austria is the personal attorney of Jörg Haider. He personally brings people in front of trial who criticize the Freedom Party. He personally phones newspapers saying that this and this person is brought in front of trial. Jörg Haider proposed that when somebody criticizes the government outside of Austria, when he's a traitor to Austria, as he says, as maybe me now, and he's a member of parliament, he should lose his seat in parliament and be brought in front of trial. He proposed that the head of the Social Democratic Party should be in jail for 1 year. And the Minister of Justice at first said this proposal is thinkable. It is worth to think about. So I think this is something that really changes the republic, and this affair with the spies in the police. Mm-hmm. One can be sure that the opponents are spied upon, and this is really a problem, I think.
Yeah. Well, are there, just to take that one step further, can you point to ways in which government, you would say that government, official government policy, laws that were enacted, were directly a result of participation of the Freedom Party in the government?
I wouldn't say so. No, I can't say that I'm so sure that in this year, what they did is much more on the administration level, or to change the posts, or to make a new climate. But I can't say, and I wouldn't say, that the democratic structure of Austria isn't strong enough till now. And there's something that also one has to bear in mind. Austria is part of the European Union. So the Freedom Party cannot do anything that it wants.
Also, just to add, and I completely agreeing with everything Don is saying, let's take immigration policies, for example, which is obviously a crucial issue in all of this. In the government that was in power before Haider entered government, which is a coalition between the Social Democrats and the Christian Conservatives, that government instituted incredibly harsh and restrictive immigration policies, so which actually they implemented in large part in order to stay one step ahead of Haider. Haider was basically demanding restrictions in immigration policy. That government was instituting those restrictions in hope of curtailing Haider's persistent rise, which is all to say that Haider doesn't – I mean, you know, there's not that much that Haider would want to change in, for example, current immigration policies. You can't have it be much more restrictive than it is at this point already.
Nevertheless, there is a discussion now going on between the Popular Party and the Freedom Party. The Freedom Party doesn't want any immigration anymore. And the Popular Party needs economic reasons, right, certain immigration.
Mm. Which just goes back, just the irony about the neoliberal question. I mean, you know, if you believe in neoliberal politics, then zero immigration is hardly the way to go, especially in a country with zero population growth, which is the case in Austria, as is everywhere else in Europe.
Mm-hmm. I should mention here, we have about 10 minutes left, and I introduce again our guest. We're talking with Doron Rabinovich. He's a writer, historian, political activist from Vienna. And as we have said, he's been a very important figure in the movement against the extreme right-wing Freedom Party of Jörg Haider. He's here to talk about this in a Millercom talk. He'll be spending a few days on the U of I campus, and we'll be talking about this afternoon, 4 o'clock, at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. Anyone's interested in attending. Also here in studio with us, Matty Bunzel. He's assistant professor of anthropology and Jewish studies and was primarily the person involved in bringing Doron Rabinovich here to the campus. And questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I also would like to have you talk about the some of the activities that you have been involved in, and particularly this demonstration that happened, I guess, about a year ago.
Right.
You had the largest crowd for a post-war demonstration in Austria.
We had 300,000 or 250, one can quarrel about that, 1,000 people on the street. And the interesting thing is, I think that is really something great about this movement. Before, we did not discuss about racism in Austria. We discussed about the past. We discussed about anti-Semitism in the past. We discussed about Kurt Waldheim. But now, really, the discussion started about racism and about the social backgrounds, what this politics want. We had a demonstration on the 12th of November after the election, and we had, in the moment when the coalition was formed, by the way, exactly 1 year ago, on the 4th of February 2000, and on the 2nd of February, we organized a spontaneous demonstration. And from the 2nd of February till the 19th of February, when we had this big demonstration, without organizing it, every day there was a demonstration in the street of Vienna, not organized, not announced, and nobody knew where it will go to, but everybody knew where it will meet on a certain place. And the interesting thing was it was organized, this really is something new, by the internet and with their cell phones. So people learned where the demonstration is just in this moment. And this is an interesting thing because the demonstration itself was something like, I would call it a ready-made demo. I would call it a demonstration which is a democratization because you didn't have central slogans. Everybody brought his own slogan, and there were a lot of jokes on these demonstrations and a lot of creativity. Then we had this big demonstration with Michel Piccoli, with Bernard-Henri Lévy, with a lot of European personalities, prominent figures, people from SOS Racisme. And afterwards, the group that I'm active in is, one can say, the established, the most established part of this movement. And I'm the speaker of this group, and we started to organize symposiums. And we had this fall, we had a symposium with Pierre Bourdieu discussing about the situation in all Europe, about the economical background of what is going on in Europe, about the situation of the migrant workers in France, in Germany, about the racist events in Eastern Germany, for instance, the situation in Belgium with the Flams Bloc, and especially what it means in Austria. The interesting thing is what happens. On the 19th of February, we announced on this day that every Thursday there will be a demonstration in Vienna. Now, maybe you know that Viennese love traditions. They don't like demonstrations, but they love traditions. And after a certain time, this started to be a tradition. Yeah. So the Thursday demonstration is something that still goes on. I wouldn't have believed it 1 year ago. Since 1 year, there are anti-racist demonstrations in Vienna. And I think this is very important.
We have another caller here. I want to make sure we get him in the time that remains, which is about 5 minutes. Someone here on a cell phone, line 4. Hello.
Yes, I was just wondering a little bit background with the economic situation in Austria. The unemployment for the highly skilled what is the unemployment in general? What is the unemployment for highly skilled people? What is the tax situation? And is there some economic reasons behind this racism, and that we could get into a little bit more than the specific policies? Thank you.
Yeah, good question. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that Austria is in a social, very good situation. It is not as strong. It doesn't have a high unemployment rate.
I think it has the lowest unemployment rate in all of the EU.
In Europe, yeah. And I think in a certain way, one has to say it's a paradox. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Austria can afford this kind of politics. If people would really be scared of a dictator because of the radicalization of politics, maybe in the moment they would scare back, they would get just step back a little bit. But they have the impression that something is not working anymore as it worked in the 70s and 80s. And this was the social partnership. Then, when you had a certain party book, you got an apartment, you got a job, everything was fixed. This has changed in the last years. One can say, is it good, is it bad? This is a thing that you can discuss about. But one thing is clear. As it doesn't work anymore, a lot of people thought, then let's change the system. It's not a social partnership. It should be a national partnership against those who are not true Austrians. So let's say somebody who is an Austrian citizen and enters a social building, house, mm-hmm. And because of the citizenship, he is allowed to live there, but he was not born in Austria, or he doesn't look as a lot of Austrians think Austrians should look like, because his skin is a little bit darker or something like this, mm-hmm. then the Freedom Party is going to spread leaflets there and say, look, there are foreigners living in so-called foreigners living in our building. So what I see is that a certain type of welfare state doesn't function anymore. And therefore, here comes the racism in, and here the racism really works.
Mm-hmm. We're coming to the point here. We have a couple of minutes left, and I guess I would like to, it just as a way of finishing, to ask a question. I would imagine perhaps some people listening, you know, might say, well, this is all really quite interesting, but what's it got to do with us here in the United States? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there some reason why this country should be concerned about Austrian politics, or this tendency that we've seen in other places to have some growth in strength of the extreme right, not just in Austria but other places?
I think it is really an international topic, because first of all we have to ask ourselves what will be the future of the European Union, and this is really an international question. Mm-hmm. Is it going the way that Jörg Haider wants it? To be a continent of nationalism, a continent of aggression? Or is it going to be a more democratic and social continent? This is one thing. The other thing is, I think that the question of migration in our time is an international question. How are we going to make this democratic? How are we going to make our world democratic? Which rights are important for migrant workers? What is with anti-discrimination law? What happens if we don't have an anti-discrimination law? What happens if we allow racist politics? What can we do against this? Oh, I think that one of the outcome of our activity now is there's only one real tool against racist politics, and that is to give a possibility to the migrant workers to speak out against it, to be present as human beings, so that in the media and in the politics, so that this won't happen. And it's also a question how you organize a state and citizenship. In Austria, you really have the notion of true Austrians, which even if you have a citizenship, you still cannot be sure to be part of the true Austrians, and this is a problem. Mm.
We're going to have to leave it at that, with, again, the mention, though, that for people who are in and around Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to hear more on this topic from our guest, Doron Rabinovich, he'll be talking about fighting racism in contemporary Austria as part of the MillerCom series today, this afternoon, 4 o'clock at the Levis Faculty Center on the U of I campus. Anyone welcome to attend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And also, Matty Bunzel, Assistant Professor of Anthropology and Jewish Studies. Thank you for
being
with us.
Thank you.